And of course, at that time, everything was just falling apart. All European borders were withdrawn. It was just a few days before Berlin Wall fell. You know, there are refugees from everywhere. It was insane, to put it mildly.
I'm Sam Post, and this is The Music Post, a show about music, what makes it great, what fascinates us about it. And today I have two stories for you, one about a pianist and one about a composer and a piece he wrote at a desperate time in his life. Both are versions of a story we've all heard before, one that's always worth hearing again, about taking what's in front of you, what you're given, and making the most of it. And we'll bring it all together at the end when our pianist of the day will play us said piece by said composer. It's a little bit different than the format I've taken in previous episodes, but as usual, the music is good, and that's what matters most. Stay with me. Our special guest today is Yulia Gorman, professor and artist in residence at American University, who's performed across the globe but lives close to me in Silver Spring, Maryland. She has an upcoming concert on March 21st at American University playing an all-Russian program, and I have to admit my initial plan for this episode was much like earlier ones, to listen to a piece of music, only with this more renowned pianist playing, and talk about it, learn about it. And so I went to visit her home to hear her play, and we started talking about how she ended up here in the United States, and I heard a story I was really unprepared for, one that I think you'll appreciate.
Sort of a wild story. It's literally the other side of the earth. It's, I think, a 12 or 11 hour time difference.
Yeah.
It's really the other side of the moon.
She left Kazakhstan when she was 17 to study in what was then Leningrad. But shortly thereafter, as the Soviet Union was easing restrictions on Jewish emigration, her family applied to leave for the United States, and they were granted permission, at least, to go to Austria.
And so all we had was $314 for a family of three and a little dog. Some music, some old pictures, a couple of pillows, and the clothes you had on. That was it. So it was in 89, it was in October, and the very first thing I remember, you know, after crossing the border, that the roads became very even. That was my very first impression.
So from Odessa, they arrived in Vienna, along with thousands of immigrants from the Soviet Union and other Eastern Bloc countries, fleeing their homes and hoping to make a better life elsewhere, most of them trying to make it here to America. Now, without getting too deep into the details, let me tell you that the politics of Jewish immigration in the late 80s was really complicated. For a while, the United States government considered all Soviet Jews refugees and allowed them entry into the country, but this was conveniently during the time when it was very difficult for them to leave in the first place. In 1989, Gorbachev's government finally allowed the Jewish population to emigrate freely, and they duly followed suit in massive numbers, with over 70,000 of them leaving that year alone, the biggest single-year flight in the history of Russia or the Soviet Union. But it turns out Gorman's family got out in the nick of time, at least to be able to come here through official channels, as the USA imposed a sudden and unexpected freeze on new visas for Soviet Jews in November 1989, only a few weeks after Gorman's family arrived in Austria, and just a few days before the fall of the Berlin Wall. None of this was clear at the time, though, as thousands of people were stuck in Vienna and Rome, waiting for approval to cross the Atlantic and come to the U.S. Gorman's family had nowhere to go for months, and she sought solace in music.
And one thing that kept me grounding, of all things, was actually Mozart.
That's good.
I had nothing. So I had this obsession with Mozart Concerto No. 21, and I played it in my head, kind of to stay sane.
She did find another outlet for her music making, which was a nearby church, which, luckily for her, had an organ.
I don't speak any German. They were kind of difficult with Russian. And so in whatever language I could, I was able to ask them if I could play an organ, even though I've never touched it. But, you know, keyboard is a keyboard. And so I did, and that's really how I preserved my sanity. I would go there every day for hours. It was 25 years, almost, last month since I left, since I actually arrived, and so I've never been back. Mm. And so 25 years is a lifetime.
Yeah.
And if it was difficult for me, I can only imagine how difficult it was for my parents.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, before I was kind of a kid, right? And then it flipped. The roles have completely reversed, because you're younger, you have to be faster and more resourceful, and you have less kind of this natural fear.
Mm-hmm.
And so you know, the instinct of self-preservation kicks in, you have to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I finally ended up in San Francisco, because that we had some relatives there.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember it was the night of a Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
I did not know what it was. I didn't care. But I remember when I arrived, my uncle asked me, "Do you know what kind of a historic day it is?" I was thinking, "Well, of course it is. I finally made it here."
He said,
"No, it's a Super Bowl." I was quite a letdown. Oh my God.
Did you know that you wanted to continue?
Yes, very
being
much.
A musician?
Very much.
Okay.
But some of my family. Well, absolutely. You have zero guidance whatsoever. You know, some of my family decided that, no, that's not realistic. And they're kind of right. When you think about it, it's not very practical. And it's better to become either a pedicurist or a registered nurse. So that was my career choice. Stuff, and I was just thinking, one day it was just dawned on me, like, what the heck am I doing? It's such a sin not to do it, but not to try what you were born to do.
Mm-hmm.
Even if I failed, at least I've tried.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, you know, I tossed that book and then started making all the right moves. So, I mean, it was like a puzzle. Now it looks like a straight shot, but back then it was so uncertain. I started playing gigs. So I remember my very, very first gig. I played some jazz or some show tunes for a fashion show.
Uh-huh.
And I made, in 1 hour, I made $100.
Uh-huh.
To me, that was $10 million right then and there. I couldn't believe this.
Do you remember how you got the gig?
Yes, I got the gig.
This is career advice for me. Right?
Absolutely, it's all word of mouth.
But how could you, who did you know at that point?
It just happened to be that one of my volunteers was through Jewish Family Services. Was a very, very nice girl who was a student at Berkeley, and it was her sorority who was putting that show. So she recommended me, even though she's never heard me play, and so somehow they believed it, and that's how I got the gig. And so that's how you do it. I guess it's taking opportunity whenever it's there and grabbing it, and hopefully you're not going to suck too bad.
I think it's safe to say she didn't suck too bad, as she quickly went from playing fashion show sorority gigs to making appearances in major concert halls around the US and Europe. Her next appearance in D.C. is at the Katzen Center at American University on Saturday, March 21st, playing an all-Russian program of Scriabin, Tchaikovsky, and Rachmaninoff, a program she'll be repeating in New York City at the Merkin Center on May 12th. I had the pleasure of talking to Gorman and then hearing one of the pieces on the program, which is an unusual piece for a very specific reason that we'll get into in a second. But first, I want to just play you a small part of it, and I think you'll appreciate more what's going on afterward. That was an excerpt from Alexander Scriabin's Prelude and Nocturne, Opus 9, and the unusual thing is that this piece is written for and performed with the left hand alone, which I'm guessing you did not expect or guess unless you already knew about this piece. Now, it turns out there's quite a bit of music written for the piano for the left hand alone. We talked a little bit about why that is.
It's amazing because there's a huge literature amount of pieces and amount of works for the left hand, and not quite as much for the right hand, hardly any.
Yeah.
And so you wonder why it is, and I think it's because, you know, part of it is the injury. You know, the right hand carries most of that stuff. You know, the strings
the
are shorter, virtuosity exactly, and so it's most common that, you know, right hand gets hurt first. Also, lots of people are right-handed, and so to play stuff for the left hand is becoming a little more of a kind of a tour de force. It's a show-off.
Yeah. It's kind of like a training.
Exactly.
In a way, yeah. Do you know why? Is there a story why he wrote
there
this?
There is a story.
Yeah, okay.
He was... I don't know.
So, as you can hear there, I didn't really do too much research before this meeting, but I discovered afterward that this piece came at a real turning point in the life of this composer, Alexander Scriabin. He's a composer you may not be too familiar with, and interestingly, he is nearly as carefully studied today as a medical case as a composer. In searching for scholarly information about his music and about his life, I found quite a few relevant articles about his various suspected psychoses and other illnesses, like this article by a psychiatrist at the University of Sydney titled "The Life of Alexander Scriabin, Megalomania Revisited." It seems that, at the very least, Scriabin was extraordinarily narcissistic, thought of himself as destined to remake the world of music and, indeed, of art. At first, though, he expected to do this as a pianist rather than as a composer. He was a very talented musician from a very young age, but had small hands, a condition for which he tried to compensate with excessive practice and strengthening. Eventually, at the age of 20, while preparing some really challenging repertoire, he suffered an injury to his right hand from which his doctors believed he would never recover. He wrote in his diary, quote, 20 years old, the injury to my right hand has developed. The most important event in my life, fate sends me forth on my mission, the obstacle to the achievement of the goal so highly desired, fame and glory. An obstacle, in the words of the doctors, that is insurmountable. The first serious failure in my life, the first serious meditation. Scriabin was clearly devastated by this injury, but channeled his despair toward composition, writing his first piano sonata as a cry against God, and then immediately following the Prelude and Nocturne for the left hand alone. Although he later regained the use of his right hand, he was never the pianist he initially dreamed of becoming, and the injury was probably a blessing in disguise, as it nudged him toward composing and fulfilling his self-prophesized destiny in a manner that he was able to pass down to us today through his compositions. Back to Gorman now, where we talked about how to make this piece work. It's such incredible writing for the left hand alone in such a way that you would never know that it's only the pianist's left hand playing, because the left hand is shifting back and forth so quickly between the different voices, it sounds like at least two hands playing instead of just one. But of course, it's very difficult to achieve that effect.
So, you know, it's possible that the piece works really well if several things are present. So one of them, you have to have a really masterful use of pedal.
Pedal, yeah, of course.
Because without it, nothing is going to happen. You know, there's a huge span.
You know, I was wondering, actually, along those lines, if at some point you would just play us a little bit without pedal, just so we see how important, how ridiculous it sounds without it, and how important it is.
Very chunky, right? Even though you're trying to play it as legato as possible, it's very chunky, and also it does not sustain, you know, the whole idea that it creates an illusion of two hands is completely gone. So pedal is very important. But second thing, which is even more important, is just to follow all the voices and think of them both horizontally and vertically.
Mm-hmm.
And so that you follow the melody, which is for the most part played with finger one and two,
mm-hmm.
and but it you know trades back and forth, because you know it's not your just a general accompaniment that's just, you know, just a couple of chords and that's it. No, there's a line that's in the bass. So let me give you just a slight demonstration so that you see what I'm talking about. There's all kinds of things going on.
So, in particular, there's really three kind of key ideas, I guess,
mm-hmm.
or motives. There's the dotted figure in the melody right at the beginning, da da da, which comes back, but then there's this very characteristic four notes in
mm-hmm.
the bass.
So they're actually more or less four voices. But you know, three distinct groups. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's a melody, there's an accompaniment, which is usually two or three notes,
mm-hmm.
and the bass line. And just to think that it's all done with just five fingers and a couple
and right
of legs.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Very clever.
Yeah. And so are there any, I know there are a couple moments in this prelude that I particularly...
Go for it.
Love.
Mm-hmm.
Will you just play us this part? So at the end, you know, there's this coda after...
Right.
After we kind of... So, you know, in a piece of music, usually we come to this restful end where we reach
mm-hmm.
kind of the home key. And then oftentimes after that, there's, you know, like an epilogue, which
mm-hmm.
just elaborates on that settled feeling. And this one is particularly striking, I think so... If you just play us from C sharp minor.
Sure. Exactly.
And then
it's amazing how this outburst, it's almost like you ruined my life.
Yeah.
Kind of
it's very tragic.
So it's a...
So, well, why don't you tell us about the Nocturne?
The transition.
Yeah.
Well, Nocturne was the one that I learned first.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an amazing piece because this is the one that truly kind of stretches your imagination. How is it possible
mm-hmm.
to have such a humongous range? And the range is from here to there.
Mm-hmm.
It is the entire span of the keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
And still have you know, musical ideas expressed. It's not just it's clever, it's gorgeous music with it to be played by one hand, two hands, an ensemble, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, while we're talking about the fact that it's one hand, you would think, well, surely it's kind of it's a limitation, at least, that, you know, surely Scriabin's best music for piano must be with two hands, and, you know, maybe you do think that.
That's not true.
But at the same time, I mean, it's really it's a really stunning piece, and of course, he's managed to do that with this limitation, and it's
exactly.
Incredible.
And I think it, you know, the limitation does not do anything
to harm the music at all.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I was playing these pieces are new to me, and I was playing. You know, I was just reading through, of course, using two hands, because
smart. Absolutely.
And it's really striking for me. It's a pretty at the beginning, not maybe the middle section, but this kind of simple, very almost naive melody, but with a very elaborate and decorative accompaniment.
Right. By itself, the melody is nothing to write home about.
Yeah.
With a different accompaniment that can be absolutely most kind of I mean, that could be absolutely ghastly and awful, right? But what he did with this,
and we'll play us that same with the but then it has a stormier middle,
and
which culminates in this
you
incredible
really move
cadenza.
Like crazy.
Yeah.
And so there's one part where I kind of audience think, aha, now she's going to play it with her right hand.
But no.
I hate to disappoint you. I only grab the end of the piano so that I don't fall off the chair. Because you are so far in the right. You know, there's almost nothing holding you, right?
Yeah.
I don't want to make a fool of myself. People might talk.
I wonder if it's ever happened that someone's just taken a spill.
Right. That would break the magic, I think.
Well, shall we?
Shall we?
Shall
right,
we?
Exactly.
And finally, I got to hear, and now you get to hear, all the way through the Prelude and Nocturne for the Left Hand by Scriabin. Thank you.
birds were singing. Wasn't that so wonderful?
Thank you so much. And I can attest that it was entirely with the left hand.
We have a witness.
It was no cheating. Yeah, it's a, well, I'm, you know, I mentioned the end of the prelude, but the end of the nocturne is very strange and striking.
Mm-hmm.
The series of chords that come,
right.
Very unusual harmonies.
Good.
Really wonderful. I have nothing left to add, I think. And thank you for telling us your story and for playing so wonderfully. And
my pleasure.
Such fire and incredible passion in that piece.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Special thanks to Stacy Picking for helping to coordinate this episode. You can find out more about this podcast at the Music Post website, www.samueljpost.com/podcast, and I'll put up plenty of links for Yulia Gornman as well. We heard some music interspersed in today's episode by Shostakovich and Mozart, and much of it was also improvised by me, which was a first. So I hope you enjoyed it. You could probably tell which was which. At any rate, that's it for today's episode. Thanks for listening. You can reach me at samueljpost@gmail.com. I hope you will make it out to Yulia Gornman's concert on March 21st. If not, I hope you enjoyed listening to her play today, and I hope you'll join me next time.